Action. Following program are pre-recorded.
Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Baca, along with Kevin Oberland, Dakota Pharmacy, Dakota Natural Health Center, downtown Bismarck's Corner Drugstore, and Jeff, pharmacist as well, joining us this morning. And okay.
Yeah.
this is kind of a, when you were telling me about his experience running a little triathlon down in Arizona, and then you're like, hey, we should have him on and talk about it. I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea. And then as this has evolved a little bit, it's kind of turned into, and I know you, Kevin.
Yeah.
This is your version of a gotcha moment because this is funny.
It is. I felt sorry for him.
How long?
He got back on Tuesday, and I felt sorry for him for a while because he couldn't even tie his shoes. Yeah. And that's not because he couldn't bend over. His feet could not handle a tied shoelace.
So. Wow. All right.
Jeff did triathlon Arizona. And
yeah. Okay. You are the fitness guru guy and the triathlon. I'm like, okay, why was... Tell us the thought process of, okay, I'm going to go do this triathlon down in Arizona, and the thought process, the training process that goes into that. Because, you know, I have April Lund on, and she does amazing running things. And it's like, triathlons are a little different. That's a different animal.
And it was an Ironman.
Okay, so, now it's a triathlon on steroids.
So Ironman Arizona, which was on November, I think it was 17th, and so everybody's like, why did you want to do that? And
yeah, why?
It's a good question. I think it goes back to when I was a kid. I grew up, my dad was an endurance athlete, ran marathons, did Olympic distance triathlons, did a bunch of cycling, did a bunch of running, winter biathlon. So I kind of grew up in that endurance sport environment. I ran cross country as a kid. And I remember watching the Ironman Triathlon, ABC's Wide World of Sports, right? I mean, we all remember the...
Oh, yeah.
And I remember watching that thinking, this is just incredible. Like, to be able to push your body to that limit. And growing up, I always wanted to do a triathlon, whether it be a sprint distance, you know, whatever. And I just never could wrap my head around being efficient enough to swim or being disciplined enough to teach myself how to swim, you know. And so it was always one of these things that, like, I wanted to do, but just never really could swim well enough to do it or feel confident enough to do it. And so, in May of 2023, I tore my distal bicep tendon in my dominant arm, my left arm, which for me was kind of the first real injury I've ever had in my life. Like, real substantial. I mean, I've had injuries, but it's like a couple weeks here, a couple weeks there, you're fine, right?
Yeah, dings.
Yeah. And so, and I remember reading about, looking about, like, okay, what's my next step? And they're like, well, this is real common in middle-aged men.
I'm like, all right, that's where it went off the rails.
Yeah.
As soon as you said, wait a minute. Reality check here, right?
So here I am, you know, like, realizing, I guess I'm middle-aged. And a lot of the training I had been doing up until that point was off the table. Like, I was going to be in a brace and a sling for the, you know, after surgery for at least 12 weeks. And they told me, you won't probably gain full strength and functionality back in that arm for a year. And so I was like, well, everything I was doing up to that point was lifting weights, stuff like that. So I was like, I need to refocus on what I need to do, you know, what I want to do for training. And I think, you know, this might be the time where I really take a shot at this, completing a triathlon. That was my initial goal. And during this whole time, I was reading a book at the time called The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter. And he talks about how society has gotten really, it's gotten too convenient, too easy for society. You know, everything's just kind of planned.
We're not pushed.
Yeah. Essentially, we don't do hard things. And he talks about a concept, a Japanese concept called Masoji, which is what, and his Masoji is like, pick something really, really hard. And there's two rules. One, it needs to be really, really hard. Two, don't die.
Well, you can't set the bar any lower, I guess.
and he talks about when you make it really hard, make it where you have a really good chance of failing. Like, you have a very good chance of failing. It's not something like, oh, I might, if something happens, I might not do well. But make it so you might fail. and you have to work really, really hard at it. And so I was reading this book at the time. I'm like, I need to take a run at a triathlon. You know, initially it was a triathlon because I couldn't swim more than 100 meters without feeling like I was going to die.
So this is your first triathlon.
The Ironman was not my first. It was my second.
Second.
Yeah. But not my first rodeo. It was my second.
First Ironman, though.
First Ironman, yes.
And for those that don't know, differentiate what a triathlon is versus an Ironman triathlon.
Well, so there's all kinds of different disciplines in our triathlon. There's a sprint distance, which usually has like a 500 to 750 meter swim, about a 12 mile bike, 6 mile or a 3 mile run. There's Olympic distance, which usually goes to a 1 mile run, about 25 mile bike, and probably like a 10K. Then there's a half Ironman, which is 1.2 mile swim, 56 mile bike, and 13.1 mile run. So it's a half marathon. And then the full distance Ironman is a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, and a 26.2 marathon at the end. So my initial goal was just to finish the sprint. Like, this is going to be hard enough for me initially because of this, like, me imagining myself swimming 700, and I did the Bismarck Triathlon here in June, which, phenomenal event. I think they run it very, very well. If anybody's considering doing a triathlon, that would be one to start. I think it's great. But that swim was 750 meters.
So where do you swim down in Arizona?
You swim in Tempe Town Lake.
Okay.
Which?
Because people think Ironman, yep. And the first thing you think about Hawaii, Kona.
Hawaii.
You know, that's
quintessential.
That's the Ironman. And I could imagine myself swimming that going, don't get eaten by shark. Don't get eaten by shark. Okay. Not in Tempe Town Lake.
No, there's Ironmans all over the country, all over the world. You know, they run Ironman. The company that runs Ironman is just huge. They run half Ironmans all year long.
It's a global business.
Huge, huge global business. And so, you know, for me, it was just finishing a triathlon. So I made it a goal to do the Bismarck Triathlon. And I remember my parents came out to watch me. I have to laugh at this. My dad's like, I'm going to put your mom at the bike turnaround. I'm like, why the hell are you going to put her way out there? He's like, well, I don't want her to see her drowned. And I think he was partly serious in it. I'm like, I'll be all right. Like, I'd been able to swim, you know, 1,000 meters in the pool. I felt fairly confident I could suffer through a sprint triathlon. Well,
that's an interesting way to put it, is suffer through.
Yeah.
Because that has to kind of be your mindset, right?
For me, for my first one, yeah, it was absolutely. Unless you're a swimmer in high school or you're a really strong swimmer, for me, it's a survive, bike, and run.
Please don't drown. Please don't drown.
Yeah.
Please don't. Yeah.
And you know, and it took me, in the pool, I was swimming 16, 17 minutes for 750. You get in that open water, you get in there surrounded by a bunch of people, and everything goes out the window. I think I sidestroked that whole 750 meters. It took me 22 minutes to get out of the water. My dad said, you weren't last, but you were really close. And I'm like, yeah. No, what makes up for it is I'm actually a pretty strong cyclist. And so I passed like 25 or 30 people on that first.
All right, hold that thought. Sure. We don't want to come back to that. We're talking with Jeff from Dakota Pharmacy, Dakota Natural Health Center, Kevin Oberlander as well. We're talking about the methodology of going into doing your first Ironman triathlon. And how long would that take you to get out of the water dog paddling, Kevin?
Actually, I'm a pretty good swimmer.
Are you?
Yep. Okay. Years ago, I did a triathlon.
Did you really?
In Devil's Lake. Yep. And I came out of the water way
Devil's
out.
Lake doesn't count because if it's in the fall, you can walk across it on the plankton.
It was in the summer.
On the algae.
I came out close to the lead in the swim, but that was the end of it.
That was okay.
Yep.
We're talking.
I finished.
We're talking about fitness and training this morning is what the focus is. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 12. Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Bockelin with Kevin Oberlander, Dakota Pharmacy, Dakota Natural Health Center, downtown Bismarck's Corner Drugstore. Also, pharmacist Jeff with us in the studio talking about his first Ironman triathlon and his second triathlon. The good news is you didn't drown.
Yep, the good news is didn't drown.
But we're talking a little bit during the break about the mental aspect. And I've got a bunch of friends that have done triathlons and Ironman, friends in Hawaii, and 201 of them, and all asked separately, and just in conversation, and they've all kind of come up with the same answer. getting your mind right for the swimming part is the hardest part of a triathlon. Getting your mind right for the swimming part actually doesn't start with swimming. They've all said it's like, I learned to float for hours because you and I were talking during the break and you're stuck in the water with your own head.
Yeah.
It's just you and in your head and you got to have your mind right for that. And they're like, their training always starts with the fact that I'm not going to drown. We're fine.
Yeah.
And that's where it starts.
Yeah. I think that was the game. Realizing that for me. So I think it was part of the problem where it took me so long to complete this was because, or to realize I can do this was, I'm going to float if I stop swimming.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
drown.
I used to have this mentality where if I'm not kicking 500 miles an hour and paddling as hard as I can, I'm going to sink to the bottom. And you're like, so for me, learning how to float, and like I was saying, thank God for the internet that has all these videos and coaching tips and stuff that kind of you realize that, you know, this isn't as hard as it you make it out to be.
It's kind of like that Lieutenant Dan moment in Forrest Gump when he finds God and, oh, hey, he's just like floating out in the ocean and yep. in the Gulf. And,
so,
and it was easy. Now, you have done triathlons, Kevin.
Yeah.
And you're actually a good swimmer.
I'm a very good swimmer.
You're good on the swimming side.
Yep. So when Jeff was training for the Bismarck Triathlon.
Did you give me a tip?
And well, no, but he used to
Don't
leave
drown.
At night saying, I'm going out to do some swimming. I hope I don't drown. So when I'd get there the next morning, I'm like, yes, Jeff didn't drown. He made it.
But he learned to float.
I just learned to swim more relaxed, essentially. So yeah, I finished the Bismarck Triathlon. It went about as well as I expected. You know, once I got through the swim, I'm like, all right, I'm going to finish this. And, you know, and I've done a lot of cycling, so the bike was about what I thought it was going to be. In the run, it was kind of like I'm holding back a little bit on the bike because I'm like, all right, the run's coming up. It's only a 5K, but yet I don't know how I'm going to feel. I've never done this before. Felt great on the bike. So like I said, that was my experience with the first sprint triathlon.
So and swim was the first part, right?
Yeah, swim, bike, run.
Swim, bike, run.
And I was just, when I finished, I was like, all right, like I finished my goal as being finishing a triathlon. And I was super happy with myself, you know, just, you know, I was like, I can do this. And so this was right at the court towards the end of June. And I was like, all right, if I'm going to make a run at this Ironman, I'm going to make a run at it. So about a week later, I hired an online coach, told him this is so right before 4th of July. I was like, hired an online coach, gave me a training plan. He's like, well, which one do you want to do? I said, well, hopefully in the next year. I said, you know, my goal was to do it in 2024, but if I said, I'd like to do it by the end of this year, 2024. He's like, whoa, hold on.
he starts giggling on the other end of the phone.
Yeah, he goes, hold on. He goes, a lot of people look, and this was 5 months. So last Ironman distance, full distance is, well, one's in Cozumel, Mexico, which is the end of November. Then there's one in the one in Arizona, and then there's one in Florida right at the beginning of November. So my initial goal was Florida, Ironman Florida, and a couple of reasons. One, I could possibly wear a wetsuit depending on the water temperature, and two, it was an ocean swim. So I'm like, I'm going to float really well in the ocean. It's going to make it a lot better.
Do they have a triathlon at the Great Salt Lake?
Yeah, no kidding, right? And so he's like, well, most people consider a marathon in 6 months to be hard. And I'm like, well, I've run some marathons. I've done some endurance events. I've done some, you know, like 65-mile-plus adventure races in my life. I said, I'm not a stranger to, like, suffering for a long time.
Yeah, well, my wife does half marathons, and she's done marathons. And her training regime is minimum 3 months to get ready for any of those longer-distance races.
Yeah, so he's like, well, I'll draw up
your training. So 5 months.
5 months.
For a triathlon.
Yeah, to really learn how to swim 2.4 miles.
Wow.
And he's like, I'll draw you up a training plan, but he goes, you need to seriously look at this. And I told him, like, I have kids that play travel soccer. I have this. I have a full-time job. All this stuff. And he's like, well, I'll draw you up a training plan, but you need to seriously take a look at it and see if he goes, because you're going to need to hit almost all your workouts. And I'm like, I get it. Like, this is going to be hard. So he drew it up, throws it out to me, you know, the first couple of weeks I'm looking at, it's like 7 or 8 hours a week. And I'm like, over 6 days. You know, it was 6 days a week, one day off a week. The first couple of weeks were like 6 or 7 hours. And then the wheels fell off. It was like 10, 12, 15, 16. And I was doing
it becomes a full-time job.
It becomes, you know, you're averaging 2 to 3 extra hours a day. Most of those are coming on Saturday and Sunday. But, you know, you're looking at it. For me, he did a three week on, 1 week off. So, like, I gradually build over 3 weeks, and then I have a lower volume week. I never really had a full week off. So, like, towards the end, those training volumes, you know, you're in the pool, and I was doing a beginner track. I told him, I just want to finish. My goal is to finish 12 to 14 hours. He's like,
all right. Not drown.
Yeah, not drown. He's like, all right. So he put me on a beginner training program. Because I was over 45, I think he said, I'll put you on a master's one. You get a little more rest. I'm like,
good. Because he's middle-aged.
and I said, master's is good. That way I don't want to go in there all beat up. I don't want to go in there or injure myself and not be able to even complete it. So,
yeah, the worst thing would be you get injured during training and not be able to do it.
So you have these three-week build-ups, and the third week is usually towards the end. I mean, those were like 15, 16-hour weeks. And, you know, most of my workouts during the week with my job is like an hour, hour and a half. But on the weekends, it would be 5.5 hour bike, 2.5 hour run, 3 hour run. And those are happening on Saturday and Sunday. And I can't tell you how many times you're at one of your kids' soccer games. You get home at 9:30. I'm like, all right, I got to go run for 2.5 hours. And so you're running at midnight.
So anybody complaining about getting up and going to the gym in the morning, or, you know, long day at work and going to the gym afterwards? Just calm that right now.
Yeah. You know, I had a little bit of a front row seat because he would leave at night after working, and I knew he was heading out to do some lengthy training. And he would comment. He'd make a comment, or I could see it was getting old. It was wearing pretty
thin. Really starts. It does, and it wears on your family. I mean, like it's tough. It's a lot of commitment, and you try. And me, my whole goal was I don't want this to affect my personal
life. All right, I want to talk about the mental aspect of getting the mind right for getting into the training through the competition, because we've been talking about the physical side of the mm-hmm. training, but the mental part is probably just as big, if not bigger. And then, of course, the nutritional side of training for this and participating in a triathlon, let alone an Ironman triathlon. I'm Steve Bakken, along with Jeff, pharmacist over at Dakota Pharmacy, Kevin Oberlander, Dakota Pharmacy, Dakota Natural Health Center, downtown Bismarck's Corner Drugstore. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
News Talk Smart Mandan. Super Talk 1270. Welcome back to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Bakken, along with Kevin Oberlander, Dakota Pharmacy, Dakota Natural Health Center, downtown Bismarck's Corner Drugstore. We're talking with Jeff, who just completed an Ironman triathlon down in Arizona. And we're talking a little bit about the training and the preparation and the things that go into a triathlon, let alone an Ironman triathlon. And, okay, Jeff, I want to talk about the mental health aspect of this, because getting your mind right, and we talked a little bit about it on the swimming portion, but there's a ramp up for not only the physical side of training, but you have to start preparing mentally. And in your case, it takes a village. I mean, family and everybody's got to participate.
Yeah. If you don't have your family or
you need
your support staff, it's going to be hard. It's just a grind. The training is an absolute grind. Especially if you're trying to like still go to your kids' sporting events, still, you know, get up and go to work. It's a grind every day. And it's some mornings it's 4:30, 5 a.m. Some days it's 10:30 at night.
So for your kids' soccer practice, you go there and just do laps around the soccer field while they're practicing?
Well, there's been a few. I've done a few runs in between softball games. Like they'd have a softball game hour and a half. They'd have another one. So I just ran down there around Cottonwood Park. But yeah, my poor kids are like, oh, my dad's crazy. He's out there.
But that mental part, we hear so much about mental health nowadays. And
well, if you're doing an Ironman triathlon, your mental health is already shot.
Well, okay. Fair enough. I think it starts with knowing better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But the preparation that goes into, because there's two and maybe there's more, two segments of that mental health of getting your mind right for the preparation. So through the training regimen, which is grueling enough, but then the race itself, that's a different mental mindset.
Yeah, and it's funny because I don't run or bike with headphones. I have, you know, maybe I'm just too old for that. You know, that's just not. And one reason why
they have this thing called Bluetooth now.
Yeah, I know.
I know you're middle aged.
Yeah, middle aged. But a lot of that started to come from you can't wear them in a lot of these events. And so, like, if you're going to swim for an hour and a half,
you practice in.
You need to practice without running, because without headphones, like, people are like, I can never run with headphones. But like, you're running for 4 or 5 hours. You're running without headphones. You're in your own headspace. And the training, so for me, it was vital to not train with headphones and just to be in that mental space to, you know, hey, this hurts, you know, you're gonna have to work through this. But in training, for me, it was like, it was hard. Some days you're like, I gotta get up, I gotta do this. You don't feel like doing this, but really, this was a goal for so long for me, you know, since I was a little kid. Like, to hear those words, you are an Iron Man, is like, there's just, it's, I mean, it still gives me chills, but like, to hear that, to finish that goal, that's what really drove me. Like, get up. And I mean, my people are like, do you have to go now? Like, I'm like, yeah, we're just sitting around here doing nothing. Like, this is a good time for me to do it. I'm not missing anything. So it gets to be a real grind. I mean, you come to work on Monday, everybody's like, what'd you do this weekend? I worked out. I ran or rode bike for 10 hours this weekend. And it's just like Kevin said, towards the end of it, I was ready. Like the last 2 or 3 weeks, I'm just like, I'm just done. I just wanted to get this race over with. I'm just tired. And okay. I'm just tired of the just constant drain, the constant.
Yeah, it's just a grind.
It's a real grind. But that mental toughness in training that you develop in training carries you through that.
Okay,
day.
So let's move on to the race portion. And how does that mindset, that mental component switch?
Everybody always said that the race is a reward for all the training, right? You're thinking,
yeah. Here's the cherry on top of the cupcake.
You're like,
all
whatever.
Right. Losing toenails is the reward.
We'll get to that next segment.
A really, really long day is your reward. Oh, yeah, sounds great. But so I went down to Arizona about 4 or 5 days before the race. So, and part of that was to, if I had any problems with my bike getting down there, my parents lived down there in the winter, so I was able to stay with them and they transported me around. And so it just worked out so well for me to go down
you
early.
You go walk the course, or are you allowed
you
to
go
do
down,
the course,
you can, we drove the bike course. It's all, you know, we drove the bike course, had a good idea of the run course. Swim, you just stand there and look down the river and you're like, that's a long ways away. And it's Tempe Town Lake, which everybody's like, oh, that's a little suspect. And it's not, it's funny because.
You have all your shots before you went, yeah.
And get your tetanus. Which is really funny because somebody was holding up a sign in the run that said, you survived Tempe Town Lake. The fish can't even do that. I thought it was the best one. you go down, you get your registration, you go to, there's a mandatory athlete briefing. You kind of absorb all the Ironman environment, which is, I mean, they do this as this first class operation, very, very big. I think there were 1,700 athletes that entered the water on that day. And
did 1,700 come out? That's cool.
Yeah.
It is Tempe Town Lake.
Yeah. I might have missed one or two. But so I was down there just to kind of get my head right, feel comfortable, rest. And so a lot of those first early days before the race, it was like, you know, just like there was a little bit of self doubt. There was a little bit, but then you kind of, you're like, you've done this. You've done these distances. You've never done them all in one day, but you've done these different distances. You just kind of like.
Do you have to compartmentalize it and kind of go, okay, I got to do this,
which is
the swim, and then I got to do the bike, and that's change your mindset for that. And then now I'm going to do the run and change your mindset for that. You kind of separate those?
To me, it was one discipline at a time. Like swim was going to be, I always told myself, if I can get out, so you have time limits. So in the swim, you have 2 hours and 20 minutes to complete it. And I was like, in training, I could always swim that distance in about 1 hour and 20 minutes. And so I'm like, all right, give myself an extra 20 minutes because one of the chaos of jumping in the water was a bunch of people, swimming with a bunch of people, no line on the bottom of the lake to follow, you know. And so I say, if I can do the swim in 1:30 to 1:40, I'm good. So I wasn't super concerned about the time cap, but like I took it one discipline at a time. And Then the bike is like, all right, it's 112 miles. It's going to be a long grind. And I knew the course, so I felt pretty – we had driven it. And so – and I had talked to – there's a gentleman here in town that I got to – had the ability to meet and was very fortunate to meet that did it the year before. And he, we sat down for about an hour, and he kind of told me, you know, what he went through, what the course was like, what his experience was. And he's a very good triathlete, you know, very – and so I took – that helped a ton. So – it was, for me, it's just compartmentalizing each event. You know, the swim was by far my big concern. It's just like everybody's is, it does that far.
Okay, we're coming up against the break, but I want to touch on one other mental health aspect of this. Now you're done. Is it the mental letdown, relief? What's the feeling you get from a mental capacity when you're finished with the race? Or does it take a while to, process that?
Immediately finishing or like a week later?
Both.
Immediately, it's this huge emotional high. Like, it's like this, like, I can't even really describe it, but like this, for me, it was a 6 month training. For some people, they do it for a year, 2 years. And so for me, it was like everything I did, every hard thing I did in the last 6 months, getting up, going training, not doing the want to do this, all culminates in this moment right here on the Ironman red carpet. And there's, it was amazing.
We'll find out about the, after you've compartmentalized and decompressed a little bit, the mental state. When we come back, we're talking with Jeff, pharmacist over at Dakota Pharmacy. Just did the marathon, the triathlon, the Ironman triathlon down in Arizona, which is phenomenal for anybody who's not looked into a triathlon. It's probably the pinnacle of athletic prowess for, well, for a lot of people that are not professionals and trying to get a gold medal. And those guys that do the gold medal, it's like, whoa. Kevin Overlander, Dakota Pharmacy, Dakota Natural Health Center. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 12. Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Bakken along with Kevin Overlander, Dakota Pharmacy, Dakota Natural Health Center, downtown Bismarck's Corner Drugstore. I really haven't said a whole lot today.
I'm very comfortable.
Yeah, I know. And we've got Jeff, pharmacist over at Dakota Pharmacy, and with us as well, who just completed an Ironman triathlon down in Arizona. Okay, so the mental health side, after you've processed for a week or so, what's the mental state of a triathlon athlete, in your case, you?
I have a comment.
Okay.
So I wanted Jeff to send some pictures, which he did, and we posted on social media. And the last picture is him on the medal stand with his medal around his neck, and he's got this big, big smile
on
it.
Could you lift it at that point?
This big smile on his face, and I'm like, well, he used every muscle in his body but his smile muscles because he can still smile.
That's about it, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it was the most physically exhausted I've ever been.
And mental exhaustion.
Yeah, there was a few times I threw the banana rind instead of threw the banana in the garbage instead of the rind and tried to eat the rind on the marathon. But yeah, it's, you know, a couple days post race. Initially, like the first day post race, getting on the airplane, you're like, I don't think I could ever do this again. Like you're just beat. You're like everything hurts, and then next day, it's like, oh, it's not so bad. The next day, you're like, yeah, I probably didn't do that again. And it's funny because I was told that I need to get approval at home before I sign up.
Well, yeah, it's that support network.
And I still haven't gotten that approval.
Well, Christmas is
so, yeah,
what you get.
Looking back on it, you know, once everything kind of heals and once everything, you look back at that. And somebody gave me a great piece of advice at the start of the swim, and I wish I could have really understood the advice at the time. He said, enjoy it. He goes, this is your first one. He goes, enjoy it. Because, one, this will only ever be your first one. And two, if you ever do another one, you're going to try and beat this time. And he was 100% correct. And they talk about the race being the reward. It 100% is. The environment, the people, the support staff is, the environment's just amazing. In the marathon, you eventually start walking and running with the same, you know, for me, it was a walking and running. Some people can run the whole thing. I can't, but you're walking and running with the same people for an hour and a half. You know, they pass you, you pass them, you sit there and chit chat a little bit while you walk. So you know, just
kind of slide into your group, your peers.
Yeah, and it's the environment is great, and the probably the best feeling is when you turn. For those of you who don't know, there's a huge carpet with Iron Man symbols, and they announce your name. There's fireworks, and that moment going down that carpet, I wish I would have kind of slowed down, maybe even walked it. But at the point, you're just like, I just want to be done. I'm exhausted. Because that moment, you'll never get that first
moment. Well, you film the whole thing with your GoPro, right?
So. Yeah, they actually do a great job. I have tons of videos of me come down it. You know, they announce, you know, your name, you are an Iron Man, and that just gives you chills.
That's cool.
It really is.
Talk about the nutritional side, because you're big into nutrition.
Yeah,
so what did you have to change with your nutritional regime leading up through the training into the Iron Man?
So the big thing, I didn't really change my diet a ton, as far as like what I was eating. Some days I swear I ate everything that got in front of me, which I mean, because there's days where it's a 2,000 calorie day that you're burning, you know, 1,000 calories.
One more bite.
And so I didn't change as far as like the types of food I was eating. I didn't change a ton. The big thing was nutrition during training and during the race. That's huge. So rough, when they say in an environment like that or in a race like that, you should be consuming a lot of people 80 to 100 grams of carbs per hour. And during the race, you know, it's so well supported. There's gels, there's bananas, there's fruit. So a lot of that's coming from gels. And most of my nutrition for me came on the bike. And, you know, and they say that's the fourth discipline of full distance triathlons, is because if you don't get your nutrition right, if you start throwing up everything you've eaten or you're not fueling enough, you're not going to finish. And so for me, it was 80 to 100 grams of carbs per hour, and you had to work up to that into the training. Like, your stomach can't handle that. Like, if you'd go and eat 100 grams of carbs per hour for the next 12 hours, you'd be throwing up left and right. So it took me some time to build that up, and I you look at what Ironman provides on the race, and I trained with what they provide. I bought it, and like, this is what they're going to give me race day. This is what I'm going to train with, because you don't want to introduce anything new. And so the bike, so I took a 100 calorie or 25 grams of carbs with 100 milligrams of caffeine gel right before the start of the swim, and then another 80 gram carb gel right behind it. So I had 105 grams of carbs for the swim, because, you know, and I'm like, this is what's going to fuel me through the swim. And the swim took me an hour and 50 minutes. So it was a little bit longer than I thought it was going to, but the water temperature was 60 degrees. So it was a lot colder than we thought it was going to be, and just the chaos of dealing with all the people around you and stuff. So that was my start of the swim, was 105 grams. And so I got out of the swim, felt pretty good. And then on the bike, it was about 80 to 100 grams of carbs, whether it's a gel, a bar, or in a liquid form. I had it on my bike. I had it planned.
But you have to manage that, because too much is not good. Too little is too
much. Yeah, as long as your stomach handles what you can. And then coming off the bike, my fueling plan went really well. Coming off the bike, I was really sick of gels. And so when I hit the first aid station, so I told myself, I've done bananas in training. So I went with about a half a banana every mile for 26 miles.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but all in all, my nutrition went really, really well. I did talk to one lady at mile 18 that she said she'd been throwing everything up since about mile 6.
Yeah, that's got to be brutal.
I feel bad for those people, but my nutrition went well, and I was really happy with it. But, yeah, it's just loading up the carbs.
We're coming up against the break, but I want to spend a couple minutes talking about something you've kind of stumbled into because of this experience, and it's sports pharmacy. Explain that to us.
So sports pharmacy is a discipline in pharmacy where a lot of teams are developing professional teams, Olympic type of teams are developing a pharmacist on staff to help manage, banned substance lists, helping optimize, supplements for performance, managing, prescription medications, whether they're on the banned substance list, stuff like that. And so we kind of stumbled upon this, I don't know, a few months ago, and I started looking into it. And I've met a lot of people that are probably really instrumental in the development of this.
That's been a thing in professional sports for a long time, and it's gotten down into the colleges. It's actually starting to get into the high schools now.
And that's great, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions when it comes to nutrition and supplements in the sports world, a lot of what they call bro science. And I think that's where a sports pharmacy can really benefit teams and athletes and stuff like that. So I've met a lot of these people, and it's been kind of eye-opening. And
well, we can do another show on that. I just wanted to touch on that really quickly because there's a lot to discuss when it comes to sports pharmacy. So you got the race info and videos up on Serenity University, or where can people find out a little information about your experience?
We posted a little thing on Facebook.
Yeah, right? We did some posting on social media, but I'll meet with our social media marketing gal in a couple of weeks, and we can talk about it.
We're just stopping at Dakota Pharmacy and go, hey, Jeff, how was it? Oh, by the way, one last thing. How many toenails did you lose?
Two as of right now. I lost one at mile 26 of the race, ripped it up. But I lost two, probably lose two more. So we're waiting for them to fall off.
Okay, that's another show in itself.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in today and talking about a great experience, and looking forward to your next triathlon as well.
Yeah.
This is Talk of the Town with Dakota Pharmacy, Dakota Natural Health Center, downtown Bismarck's Corner Drugstore on Super Talk 1270.
Talk of the Town, weekday mornings starting at 9 on Super Talk 1270 and the free Super Talk 1270 mobile app. Without apology, the Regular Joe Show with Joe Giganti, weekday evenings at 9 on Super Talk 1270 and the free Super Talk 1270 mobile app.
Portions of the following program are pre-recorded.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Bakken, and Ann Earsley joining us. She is a physician assistant, OBGYN, with Essentia Health. And Ann, thanks for coming in this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Make sure that we let people know that you're local and not kind of by choice. Tell us a little bit about yourself. So you work for Essentia Health, but you're from Turtle Lake.
From Turtle Lake.
And I've done a lot of pheasant hunting up there in the day.
Mm-hmm. Lots of pheasants up there. I'm from Turtle Lake. I went to college at Dickinson State and then went to PA school down in Virginia.
And now you and I were talking a little bit. Part of the reason you went in Virginia because you didn't have any plans on staying in North Dakota.
No plans of coming back. It was a joke, really, in our family, the first one to move away. And here I am, married a cowboy. Yeah, but I'm back. You can't keep us out, I guess. Married a cowboy, moved back, live the life that I did not think I would live.
So you own a horse trailer and everything, right?
We live in our horse trailer every weekend when we're going to rodeos. And I have three boys.
You know, it's funny because I remember growing up in Grand Forks, and it was like, okay, everybody wanted out.
I just want to get out.
And I have traveled all over the country working, and I keep coming home.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, and you're a great example. It's like, yep, I'm out. And you keep coming home because it's home. It's just, there's no place like North Dakota.
Right.
So fast forward, now you take your PA skills back to Essentia Health here in Bismarck, and you specialize in a segment of OBGYN that actually got a lot of press during the presidential race because of infertility treatments and IVF, and a lot of that was in the news. Explain what IVF is for people and the infertility side, because it tends to be a little bit bigger issue than a lot of people think, and especially as people are waiting a little bit later in life to have families. And that's really where a lot of this treatment comes in.
Yeah, correct. That's probably the biggest cause of the increase in infertility rates, is because people are delaying their childbearing. And there are just many. I feel like we are unaware as a population of all of the things that go into achieving a pregnancy. It's really not as easy as what it seems. The rate of getting pregnant every month is 20%. So if I have 100 women trying to get pregnant each month, 20 will get pregnant, 80 will not. And I think the awareness of that would really help people maybe accept this, learn more about it, and then maybe seek treatment sooner than they do.
And biology is an amazing thing because if one little thing is off, the odds are not going to happen because that's what nature does. That's how nature makes sure that we're trying to produce viable, healthy babies. And that's the nature part of that. Something can be a little askew and nope, not this time around.
Yep. And probably 60% of issues can be fixed and we can do so much locally before people ever get to IVF. So that's just a huge service that we can offer here in Bismarck.
So a lot of groundwork. There's a lot of things that need to go into, especially if you're in a little bit older situation. The nutrition side is huge, different supplements, lifestyle choices.
That is huge.
What are the top factors as far as leading into infertility? So whether it's the, like, let's stick with the older right now. So somebody that's a little bit older in life, you know, maybe they delayed because of their career, didn't get married till a little bit later. They pushed things off and okay, now it's time. I want to have a baby, but I'm 40. I'm early 40s. I'm mid 40s. I know people that have gone through and 50s. They've had babies, which God bless them all, but, not really the wheelhouse for a normal pregnancy.
Right. Unfortunately, as we age, especially for women, our egg quality and egg reserve, the number of eggs that we have, dramatically decreases. So your chances of naturally getting pregnant after 40 are very low, probably 5%.
And that's where you typically need a little assistance.
That is. We actually see a large number of women much earlier than that. And so at 40, we feel like we're on a time crunch. And almost always those women are getting referred to IVF or to reproductive endocrinology.
From a medical perspective, is there a hard stop or a timeline where probably not the best idea or not in your best interest? Or just does it depend on... How's your health? You know,
so many factors.
Yeah.
So many factors. And we always want to help the patient make the best choice for themselves. You know, I may think at 45, your ovarian reserve is very low and your chances of success are very low. Your chances of heartache and miscarriage and things like that are higher. And of course, I like to protect people from that disappointment as well. But we want to offer them every opportunity to achieve a pregnancy that we can.
So what are some of the other factors with lack of ability to get pregnant? So we talked a little bit about the age stuff on the women's side, but there's stuff on the men's side. There's stuff on the women's side. As far as factors earlier, before you start getting the higher age, what are some of the leading factors for complicating the ability to get pregnant?
So the most common thing that we see is ovulatory dysfunction. One cause of that is polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is becoming more common as far as recognition of that. And if you don't ovulate correctly, you can't get pregnant. So that will present in irregular periods, maybe lack of periods altogether. And that's something that's very easily managed. So
we think about that a lot with athletes, female athletes, that throw their cycles off because of their training and their athletic prowess, because it does throw the system off. And I'm a big believer in everything works in equilibrium. And if something's off over here because you're training for a specific, that might throw something. We see that with long distance runners quite a bit.
Yep, because they often will have no cycle at all. Partly due to the fact that they have no body fat. And so we see that spectrum. And then we see obesity as a major cause of ovulatory dysfunction as well. So I think that's the most important thing to recognize is everything in moderation, lifestyle modifications, diet, smoking, vaping, excess caffeine, excess...
Alcohol.
That affects both egg and sperm quality.
So when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about the guy's side, because we've just kind of covered lightly on an overview on the female side of trying to get pregnant. But there's a lot of male issues that come into play as well. We're talking with Ann Ersley. She's a PA, physician assistant, OBGYN, specializing in infertility at Essentia Health. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk.
Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 1270. You're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Baca along with Ann Ersley. She is a physician assistant, a PA, specializing in OBGYN and infertility at Essentia Health. And we talked about the women's side, at least lightly. We'll get more into that. But what are some of the typical issues on the male side with trying to get pregnant?
So male infertility is responsible for probably 30 to 40% of issues with couples. And I would say lifestyle is the biggest contributor. So caffeine and alcohol and vaping or nicotine smoking decreases sperm count and sperm motility. And just in my 20 years of practice, have seen a significant increase in male infertility. And I think that's why.
Because we don't typically think about male infertility. We think about female infertility. Mm-hmm. But yep. What was that number, 30?
30 to 40%.
40%. Mm-hmm. That is such a huge number in something we don't think about.
Right. And so with our initial workups, of course, we do labs and evaluation of the female, but we absolutely always do a semen analysis because that's such a large contributing factor.
So what are some of the causes beside
those? So lifestyle certainly has a huge impact.
You didn't mention riding a horse too much.
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's no studies that back that up.
For all of our horse friends out there, the cowboys.
You wonder.
Just making sure there.
There may be a little trauma there.
Okay. Trauma is another example, though, because and so I went through cancer treatments, and one of the things that, hey, do you plan on having children? And my wife and I were like, well, yeah, we'd like to. Mm-hmm. So I had to go, before I started radiation,
go
store some sperm.
Because chemotherapy, trauma, hernia surgery.
Radiation, depending on where it's at.
Other anatomical abnormalities all can affect sperm production.
So that is just a huge number to me, 30 to 40% on the male side. And you just don't think about that.
Right. So they, everywhere you read, there'll be this calculation. So 30% of infertility is female only, 30% male only, 30% a combo, and then 10% unexplained. So it is.
So if you're taking 100%, and then now you take 30% and 30%, it's hard to get pregnant.
It is. It's amazing that people get pregnant on their own, especially unintended.
Yeah. That is, okay, I'm learning a lot here. So when you're talking about the infertility side, because you mentioned both, when somebody's planning on starting a family, how important it is that they go see a infertility specialist or a fertility specialist to make sure that, okay, everything's normal, because you could try for a long time and not be able to start a family. And we talk a lot these days about the mental health aspect, and that can grate on a relationship huge.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably one of the leading causes of divorce, because it's such an emotional thing.
That and finances, all right.
Yes, and men and women process things different. And it's a really difficult thing. We have a few counselors that specialize in infertility, and we refer our patients to them because it is just such an emotionally draining thing. So we say that if you have been trying for over a year and you're not pregnant, then you need to come in. There may be some very easy things that we can correct without even needing to go on with medications or inseminations or things like that. But over a year with unprotected intercourse and no pregnancy, they should come in. They should not continue to wait and try on their own. Now, if you're 35 or older, 6 months, and then they should come in, because our time clock is ticking and we want to get that evaluation done sooner.
A little bit of a misconception is, so we think about the clock with females. Mm-hmm. Is there a clock with males?
There is. So the infertility
because
rate.
Because now we're talking motility and deformation, and there's a lot of other factors.
that go into that.
Yeah.
And so they say at 50, we're going to see a decrease in that sperm quality. But studies show over 40, there may be some genetic things that are showing up more. Your risk of fathering a baby with autism increases. And then as we age, we have more medical problems or gain weight. Maybe we're picking up even more bad habits. And that obviously affects sperm quality as well.
We're talking infertility with Ann Ersley, PA at Essentia Health. And the goal is to have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy baby, because a lot of these other factors, you mentioned the autism, there's a myriad of other health issues that can pop up if you're not managing that from the beginning to make sure it's a healthy pregnancy to start with. One of my questions is, over time, what have we seen? I look at a lot of different environmental factors, and, mm-hmm. and lifestyles have changed from back in the 50s to the 60s to the 70s, 80s, 90s to today. Big change in lifestyle. Correct. Big change in outside factors. Mm-hmm. What have we seen over time when it comes to infertility numbers?
So infertility is increasing for a number of reasons. That's probably one of them. Of course, we don't have hard studies regarding some of the plastics.
I blame a lot of stuff on preservatives.
Right,
I
the
really
preservatives,
do.
The things that are in our foods.
Processed food.
And we're eating processed foods more than we ever used to. So we just really try to encourage, let's have a wholesome, healthy lifestyle. That's good for your body in every single way, not just in regards to fertility.
So what should you tell a young couple in their 20s versus the message for a couple in their 30s versus the message for a couple in their 40s? What's the initial message that you want them to know?
So first is have a healthy body. So even if you haven't even started to try for pregnancy yet, just have a healthy body.
Starts with diet. Diet, lifestyle.
Cook at home. Limit your caffeine to 200 milligrams a day or less. Alcohol in moderation. No smoking or vaping. Again, that affects sperm and egg quality, but also your entire well-being. Maintain a healthy weight. Weight has an impact, again, on both egg and sperm quality. Regular exercise. And then if it has been a year, if you're under 35, or 6 months, if you're over 35 and you haven't achieved a pregnancy, don't wait. Come in. Let us help you figure out what's going on.
We're talking with Ann Ersley, PA at Essentia Health. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Hey.
Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Bakken along with Ann Ersley, physician assistant, PA at OBGYN at Essentia Health, focusing on infertility this morning. And, okay, you're doing everything right. You're having a healthy lifestyle, enjoying things in moderation, working out, eating properly. Nutrition is huge, and that's why, you know, neonatal supplements are a big part of, you know, there's a lot of foundation you have to lay. But it's not working. What are some of the signs or symptoms that there could be a problem? Because a lot of people, we don't go, especially in the upper Midwest. It's like, something's not right, but I'll tough it out. We're not going to go to the doctor. I'm a huge proponent of the triad of care. You need to be your best advocate, because you're the one that needs to. I always look at physicians as a little bit of detective work. Mm-hmm. And you need to put them on the right track, mm-hmm. to figure out what's going on with your health. So you need to be your biggest advocate. So what are some of the signs and symptoms men and women should look for that, you know, there might be a problem, there might be an issue, there might be something going on that's going to lead into infertility, if that's what you're trying to accomplish at the time? But, you know, a lot of this comes back to some general health stuff. I mean, giving yourself exams and things like that, you know, making sure there's no issues. What are some of the things people need to look for?
So for women, it's actually easier to have outward signs. So if you're having irregular periods or no periods at all, or you're doing ovulation predictor kits and you don't get a positive, you need to come in. You don't have to wait the whole year. You need to come in so we can see what's going on and how we can fix that.
In a lot of cases, it's something minor. Mm-hmm. And something might be just a little bit off, because we talked about if everything's not lined up perfectly, you're yep. probably not going to get pregnant. And that's just nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some things are very easily fixed. I think there is a fear of they're going to come in and there's this extensive evaluation and a lot of intervention, and is not necessarily that. For men, it is harder. You know, there's really not any outward signs that your sperm count is low. So for men, we just do that evaluation with the female evaluation right away. But if there are problems with sexual dysfunction or abnormalities of the testicles, those need to be evaluated right away.
Typically, what are the biggest issues if something is a little bit off with men and women?
So with women, it is most commonly polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is ovulation dysfunction.
Because that's a new term that I'm
in the last
not...
Well,
okay, so the question is there a greater prevalence of that, or is it just finally now being discovered and reported better?
Yeah, good question. It probably is that we're just more aware now than we were at the beginning of my career, which I was in just family practice. People didn't talk about that. So we are recognizing it, we are diagnosing it and treating it much more frequently than we did in the past. Obesity, unfortunately, has an impact on dysfunction as well, and we are seeing a rise in our obesity rates, which is increasing infertility.
And on the male side, and I'll use me for an example, it's like, so with my cancer, I self-examined, it was testicular cancer, mm-hmm. It's like something was a little off, mm-hmm. and went into my doctor, but I was able to go, okay, this is what I've got going on, and this is the road we need to go down. Because things start with your primary care physician.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to track down the direct, okay, that's the issue, solved, fixed, we're good. But again, people need to be able to point their physician in the right direction, because you were in family practice, mm-hmm. and how many times did you start down one road because that was the information that was presented to you, and it was something else, now we're leading into an infertility issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
that happens a lot.
Happens a lot, which is part of the reason we do that comprehensive evaluation when the female comes in, because men are much less willing to just go in on their own. And we have fantastic urologists here in Bismarck, and so they have been excellent at helping evaluate our men and getting them on the right track if there's any intervention that can be done to improve their sperm quality.
So somebody's having an issue and it starts with their primary care physician, and both men and female side.
Mm-hmm.
Something's a little off. You go in. How do you put your doctor on the right track to make sure that, okay, if we're trying to get pregnant, if there's an infertility issue, we're going to lead to that quicker than spending time on a rabbit hole that we shouldn't be on?
Sure. I think the biggest thing is at home, you track your cycles, you know, have some awareness of what's going on with your body, track your cycles, do ovulation predictor kits, bring that information in to any of us that work with infertility, and we can get started on the evaluation right
away. Data's king. It's like having that journal, having that information, so you go, here's what's going on, mm-hmm. and having that well documented, because that's a real, instead of going through the process like, okay, well, for the next 3 months, mm-hmm. track this, well, you're 3 months ahead.
Yeah, you expedite the process. You help me get an idea of what could be going on, and we just get you to your end goal quicker.
And typically for men, what's that process look like?
So we start with the semen analysis, and sometimes they, you know, we just have to talk about lifestyle modifications. And so the men often come into the appointment with their wife to review that, and we will do the referral if there is a significant decrease in sperm count or motility where we feel like there could be some anatomical things going on or where they could benefit from medication.
So is it a good idea to come in as a couple?
It is. It's really, there's a lot of information, and so I always say 4 ears are best, and it is best for everybody to feel like they are working as a team to get to where that couple wants to be.
And a lot of that comes back to the mental health side, because it opportunity to strengthen relationship instead of
be alienated from each other.
Because that's a thing, and it's interesting you mentioned the counselor side of that, but that's not typically something we've thought about 10 years ago in the healthcare world if you're talking about infertility.
Yeah, that's true. It's such an emotional subject, and often the female is doing everything, coming in, doing the labs, taking the medicines, doing the ultrasounds, and there's such a disconnect in the stress and the overwhelming emotional aspect for the wife than there is for the husband.
Well, and that's why that 30 to 40% number, the problems on the male side, is such a glaring number to me, because, you know, 10 years ago it was, well, it's your fault.
It's her problem.
It's her fault. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not getting pregnant because it's her fault. And that was kind of the stigma around infertility at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Ann Ersley. She's a PA, physician assistant over at Essentia Health, specializing in infertility. She focuses on OBGYN. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
1270.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Super Talk 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Bach, along with Ann Ersley. She's a physician assistant, PA over at Essentia Health, OBGYN, focusing on infertility this morning. And we mentioned IVF earlier, and that's where a lot of people's minds go when you're thinking about infertility treatments. But that's kind of a little bit later in the process. There are other things, other treatments that are out there that are first steps, because the IVF tends to be more invasive, a little bit bigger process, and you may not need that level of help with fertility or infertility. What are some of the walk-up or the other treatment options that are out there?
So many easier things that we can do before you need an IVF referral. Again, the lifestyle modifications can make a huge difference in sperm quality.
Nutrition.
And no vaping.
I don't think people realize vaping, smoking, chewing tobacco, caffeine and nicotine.
Energy drinks and vaping are the demise of sperm.
Are killers.
Yes.
Absolute killers.
Yep. Yep. So we just really want to have that conversation to help people be healthier. Women with PCOS, we often start a medication called metformin, which helps improve ovulation, sometimes even helps them ovulate effectively on their own. And if that is not enough, we use a medicine called letrozole that stimulates ovulation, or stimulates the body to produce follicles, and then we can force ovulation on our time frame, so we can time either inseminations or just timed intercourse, and that has been very successful for us.
So I'm thinking, it's like all of our Catholic friends out there, it's kind of the classes that they go through, they teach that as part of premarital counseling, which is good practice.
Yeah, to know what's going on with your body so you can recognize if there's a problem.
So what other treatments are out there before we get to IVF?
So we do the ovulation induction, which is medication, something called Ovadril, which triggers ovulation, and then inseminations. And we can do up to 6 cycles. And if that is not successful, then certainly people are candidates and can be referred for in vitro, or at any point if that's just the road that they want to take.
Okay. Now let's move on to in vitro fertilization.
Mm-hmm.
For those that are not familiar with IVF, explain that to our listeners.
So that's a process where the specialist will stimulate your body to produce many eggs. They retrieve them surgically, fertilize them with your partner's sperm, and then transfer into the uterus.
And more of an invasive procedure. So that's why you want to walk up to that. Now, for somebody who one partner, it's just not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other options out there? Because there's sperm donors, there's egg donors, mm-hmm. there's a lot of other ways to get pregnant, but you got to walk through that process as a couple.
Absolutely. And to, you know, just come in so you are aware of the options. We do a fair amount of donor IUIs. Some partners have had vasectomies, and we have same-sex couples who just need that sperm to help complete their family. And so we work with sperm banks from all over the country so we can give them those options.
Vasectomies. Are they reversible? Are they not? Some are, some aren't. It kind of depends, right? Because I've known people that have had it reversed because they've gotten married later and then wanted to start a family when they mm-hmm. didn't plan on having a family, and because that was a couple's decision. What's the last word on vasectomy?
There are different facilities in the U.S. that you can go for a reversal. Will it be successful?
Don't know.
We don't know until afterwards.
Some do, some don't.
Correct.
And so it a big decision for somebody, though. So mm-hmm. what would be the advice if somebody's considering a vasectomy? You know, is that a time to go, okay, maybe I should store some sperm, have some sperm frozen? I know women are maybe on a career path. Women are having their eggs frozen mm-hmm. now. Those are all things you need to think of earlier in life.
Yeah, it's sort of a conversation that is new because people didn't think like this before. But you really can say, I want to have my career and not have a baby till I'm 40. And it is best really in your 20s to get set up with...
That would be the time to be harvested. Mm-hmm. And
with
having
a facility to store both your eggs or sperm, whichever.
Mm-hmm. So is that something you guys...
We can help facilitate that.
Through that process?
Yep. We can be the people that give you all the information and get you to the right place.
So... And that's we talk about couples a lot, but that's a single
decision. That's an individual decision.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking about that, and both from a health perspective on the male side or the female side, it's better in your 20s.
20s. Yes. Your eggs and sperm are at their peak in your 20s.
And they can store those in a facility frozen forever.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of information out there. If somebody wants more information, wants to reach out to your department or you specifically mm-hmm. and get more information, how do they do that?
Well, either online or you can give us a call at Ascenta Mid-Dakota Center for Women. We have multiple physicians and myself at our clinic that can get you started on the evaluation and process.
Okay, the one thing we haven't touched on is the Center for Women with Ascenta. Mm-hmm. You guys are part of that with the infertility side of stuff. That is such a huge asset for our community because the focus is on women's health and all aspects of women's health.
Yes, it's a wonderful facility. It's kind of a one-stop shop. You can come in for your general medical care, your infertility questions, your menopausal care. We have lab and ultrasound and mammogram all on site. So we just can make it one place for a woman to have her complete care.
A lot going on over at Ascenta Health. Once again, what's the website or how do people get a hold of you or your department?
So ascentahealth.org, or you can give us a call at the main number, 712-4000. And we, again, have multiple physicians and myself who can get you started on the process.
Anne, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Anne Ersley, she's a physician's assistant, PA, over at Ascenta Health, working in OBGYN, specifically in infertility. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. And, you know, the thing people don't think about is planning for, hey, what happens when I'm in my 40s and I want to start a family then. That's a thing you need to think about when you're in your 20s. It really is. So, and of course, all those lifestyle changes, mm-hmm. you know, be healthy, make
be
good
healthy.
Decisions, because it does pay dividends later when you want to start a family. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
Talk of the Town, weekday mornings starting at 9 on Super Talk 1270 and the free Super Talk 1270 mobile app.